David Gamilla.
We ended last week. Basically, last week was what at that point was a boring description of Yehuda's conquest campaign. Another place he beat, another place they beat, another place they beat. We ended up with the beginning of the story of Yosef's conquest campaign, which began with a miraculous conquest of the city of Luz, in which the scouts, who were sent really just to spy on the city, went ahead, after discovering the entrance, they went ahead and captured the city completely on their own. So that's the beginning of going on to the other tribes, doing each of their respective conquest campaigns. So we're going to start at the end of Perek Aleph, Pasuk Chav Zayin. And here is where I stressed, as we were going through Yehuda, that it sounds boring now, but when we move into the other Shvatim, when we see the whole style change, we'll appreciate the boring, the monotonous sound of Yehuda's conquest campaign. So we're continuing to describe Yosef. Yosef had started with this miraculous victory. How does it continue? So Yosef divides into two Shvatim, Menashe and Ephraim, right? Now, Menashe settled themselves, but again, each Shevet was meant to completely purge its territory. Menashe did not drive out the people of Beis Shan and its suburbs, Beis Tanach Ves Benoisel, or the area of Tanach and its suburbs, Beis Yeshve Dor Ves Benoisel, Beis Yeshve Yivlon Ves Benoisel, Beis Yeshve Megiddo Ves Benoisel. Nor did they drive out the residents of Dor, Yivlon, Megiddo. Vayoyel HaKnani Lo Sheves Ba'oretz Hazos. So the Kanani, who had been displaced from the area that they did conquer, they moved into a different town. They resettled, and life went on. Part of the territory inhabited by the Jews, part of the territory inhabited by the Kanani. Now, this is brought in specifically after that whole description of their initial miraculous success as a claim against them. They also started seeing very unique Siyata Dishmaya, right? So they had no reason not to go ahead and finish it up. And therefore, that context, right, the juxtaposition of the way it's presented, they started with a smashing miraculous victory, and afterwards, all right, they settled the areas they needed to settle, and the others can wait. Vayehi ki chozak Yisrael. And then, even as Yisrael gained power, they made the Kanani in the area into vassals, tributaries. They made them pay tax. But they did not drive them out. Okay, so that we're already noting. Again, the context is indicating a special taina against them. And this is what we have to know. When you do see special Siyata Dishmaya in a certain area, shouldn't just take that as, oh wow, look what a great thing happened to me, and then you move on in life waiting for the next great thing to happen to you. You have to take that as a sign Hashem is with you. You have to respond in kind. I hear people telling stories about Hashgacha Pratis stories. You have to realize that Hashgacha Pratis story is a story that now, you had a Hashgacha Pratis story, it's a story that now obligates you. You're going to be held to a higher standard now. Hashem showed you closeness, you should take that closeness further. So that's being expressed here in these psukim. Okay, that's Menashe. So we have one shevet okay, one shevet not okay. Have the rest of the Shvatim continue. Ephraim lo hirisha saknani ayoshev begezer. Ephraim did not drive out the Kanani residents of Gezer. Vayeshev haknani bekirboy begezer. And the Kanani simply dwelt among them in Gezer. So here also we're noting.
Living together in the same city?
Yeah, probably they were two separate areas, you would imagine. But here also we're noting. So first of all, we had Menashe, they saw that even when they were more powerful than the Kanani, they didn't bother to drive them out. Meaning, it's one thing if You don't have it in you to make this next battle. But here we say that they gained control. They made them into tributaries. They didn't drive them out. And now we see Menashe is already the next step. They kind of just ignored their presence. They didn't even make them into vassals. What they call dual existence, is that what they call it? Zvulun loy harish es yoshvei Kitroin. Zvulun did not drive out the residents of Kitroin. Ves yoshvei Nahalo. Neither did they drive out the residents of Nahalo. Now again, let's understand what's going on here. The point here is that yes, each Shevet was already settled. They had their land. Now it was just the issue of following through. They were fine, materially. It was just the issue of following through with Hashem's command. I want the area completely cleansed. And that was... We'll see. You know? So they didn't drive out the people of Kitroin. Vayeshev HaKnani Bekirboi Vayu Lamas. Again, the Knani continued dwelling among them, and they became vassals. They became tributaries. I'm not sure if I'm using the right words, but you get the idea, right? Is tributary only a river? Or does it work for this too? Tribute. Tributes. Oh, okay. Now here also, I just wanted the Mepharshim note something here. There's significance to Zvulun not getting rid of the people of Kitroin. Zvulun wasn't so excited about this land. The land that they got. The Gemara Megillah says that the area of Kitroin was a mountainous area. Lamaisa was blessed with very, very good, certain very good commodities, but it wasn't the classic good, fertile land for working the land, for agriculture. It had other milas. There was chilozim there. That was the rare type of squid that you produced chilis from, which makes it very valuable. There are other certain assets there, but unusual kinds of things. And it wasn't good for just good, plain, standard agriculture. And they complained about it. And that's this area, Kitroin. And therefore, they weren't so enthusiastic about putting the bother into clearing out this area. It's not so hot anyways. Yes, they were. Yeah. Zvulun? Yisachar. I'm sorry, we got mixed up. Yeah. Okay. So here also, we have to note something. We're going to contrast in a general way all of this back to Yehuda. But let's note something also. Again, often we do things, let's say for example, the classic mitzvah that we like to do. Einik Shabbos, right? Classic mitzvah that we like to do. Person says, L'chvoid Shabbos Kodesh, and he digs into the chalim. So there's the famous question that everybody, you know, that the famous wisecrack. Is it L'chvoid Shabbos Kodesh, or is it L'chvoid your stomach? What are you saying before you're eating the chalim? Maybe it would be more apropos to say, L'chvoid my stomach. So Lamaisa, it's a big discussion. It's a good thing to do. Even if you're eating L'chvoid your stomach, you say L'chvoid Shabbos Kodesh, because that does, Lamaisa, bring out some awareness that, no, you're involved in something spiritual here. At least have that in your consciousness. Don't just let it be a physical activity. But this was very much also the challenge with the Shvatim. The Shvatim, they're meant to be conquering land. For what purpose? Because Hashem wants the land cleansed out, and because they're meant to settle the land. They're meant to enjoy this land. So, when you see a Shevet is busy clearing out its territory, there can be mixed motives there. This is good land. We want to have it. We're also doing a mitzvah. So here was the test, right? Here we see, the test comes down to what happens when you're not in the mood. When it doesn't serve your material purposes, can you still be as enthusiastic about it? The case of Einik Shabbos wouldn't be a good case, because when a person is not in the mood for challenge, there's no mitzvah to eat challenge. But there are other such cases where there's a mitzvah that in certain circumstances is enjoyable, and then you go about it with a lot of gishmak. What happens when it's not enjoyable? And that's going to be a big test of how much you can claim that I'm really doing a mitzvah in all those other cases. So what happened with Zvulun here? The land that was gishmak, they cleared out. There was some land that wasn't so gishmak. It was only a mitzvah. Or put it this way. In this case, it was more mitzvah than material pleasure. It just kind of got neglected. Now, if we do go back to... So first of all, compare this with Yehuda, right? town after town after town, just boom, 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 one after another, until they completely cleansed out their whole area. There's another point also that should be stressed here between the difference between Yehuda and what we're seeing here. As we mentioned earlier, it was not just an issue of mitzvah. And I'm going to dwell on this more further. But it wasn't just an issue of the mitzvah. It wasn't just an issue of them getting the land. It wasn't just the issue of the mitzvah, which is plenty. But there was another issue, and that was, like we saw before, the national responsibility. Yehuda went about their conquest campaign not just with the realization that they're getting themselves land, and not just with the realization that they are fulfilling the mitzvah, but also with the realization that by fighting hard now, we are going to be making it easier for the rest of the Shvatim to gain their land. Because as we saw earlier, there was the morale aspect. Right? The more victories they see, the more encouraged everybody else is. So here also, we're seeing why Yehuda was chosen for the job. Right? We said back all the way at the beginning that the Jewish people consulted with Hashem and asked who should be the one to start the campaign. And as we explained back then, the significance of the question was, who's the right tribe that will get that initial victory that we need in order to get the morale rolling? And the answer was Yehuda, and we saw them do the job. And now we're seeing, why was Yehuda chosen and not Zvulun? We're just seeing it illustrated here. If Zvulun would have been the first ones, is it really worth, is this land worth the effort? Okay. These things need to be noted. Yehuda? No, Yehuda did. Oh, so the truth is, we have to stress already now that everything that we're talking about here is relative. Meaning, as we'll see soon, the way I'm presenting it is a lot more harsher than is really justified. Meaning, if somebody of those Shvatim would be sitting here, he would be very indignant at the way I'm expressing it. And I'm going to put it into a better perspective as we move on, because what do you mean? They did clear out areas, right? It's just that they didn't go about purging the whole area quickly. We're going to see soon that we're talking about a period of approximately 14 years in which they were expected to go non-stop from battle to battle. Now, the nature is such, it's hard to go from battle is weary, battle is demoralizing. It's understood that you have to be able to catch your breath in between. So when we talk about them being lax, really what it means is that they didn't go about it energetically enough. It could be that they didn't have in mind to continue the process. We'll see soon. Hashem told them game over at a certain point when it was unexpected. It could be that they did have in mind, just whereas Yehuda, they won a battle, and the next day they were on to the next battle, which is something that really is unfathomable. It's almost superhuman. We'll see soon. We'll put it into more perspective. These Shvatim weren't mamish on that to that degree. So the truth is, it's not like it was black and white. Yehuda gave them the morale and they didn't do anything. They did do. But they didn't do enough fast enough. That's really what's going on here. As we're going to bring out soon.
Why aren't they fighting at the same time, approximately?
This was going on approximately at the same time. Yeah, this is going on approximately at the same time. Okay, how does it continue? Asher lo yahirish es yoshvei Akkad. Asher did not drive out the residents of Akkad. Ves yoshvei Tzidon, ves Achla, ves Achziv, ves Chelba, ves Afik, ves Roichav. Neither did they drive out the residents of Tzidon, Achla, Achziv, Chelba, Afik, and Rechoiv. Again, a whole bunch of towns that we just left. What's that?
So what did they do?
They only cleared out 9 or 10 other cities. I mean, let's note. We have to note that the Navi is not telling us what they did do. It's only telling us what they didn't do in classic Navi style. They might have conquered 25 cities, but the Navi's not interested in patting people on the back. The Navi is focusing on what was not done. Yehuda, the whole tone was different because there was nothing that wasn't done. Let's see. Now, Vayeshev ha'asheri bekerev ha'knani, Yoshvei ha'aretz. Now what ended up developing from this was that the problems already started developing in a subtle way. The Asheri settled among the Knani of the land, Kilo Harisha, because they did not drive them out. Meaning, this is already a different expression. Before we said, both about Ephraim and Zvun, that the Knani dwelt among them. Now we're saying that Asher dwelt among the Knani. The Mepharshim pick up on the nuance here, which is, Asher, one dwelling among the other denotes that the former is the minority, the latter is the majority. So before it was, we had some Knani dwelling among Ephraim and Zvulun. And now it's already, Asher is dwelling among the Knani. It's already another step of failure. That this was already a point where Asher was the minority in the area. Now, it is possible that it was already because they weren't able to fight to clear out more space, because one thing leads to another. Let's see. Naphtali lo hayrish es yoshvei Beit Shemesh. Naphtali did not drive out the residents of Beit Shemesh, es yoshvei Beis Anos, or the residents of Beis Anos. Vayeshev bekerev haKnani yoshvei Aretz, and they dwelt once again among the Knani, the residents of the land. Vayeshev Beit Shemesh uBeis Anos hayu lahem lamas. And here also, the residents of Beit Shemesh and Anos became their tributes, tributaries, tributes. Okay, now we move on. Once laxness starts setting in, the Siyata Dishmaya starts relaxing also. That's always how it works. And therefore, what's the next step? We move on to Shevet Dan. Now Dan couldn't even manage to properly settle their own living space. But as we've been discussing up till now, the Shvatim had their living space. The question is, are they going to purge out the rest of their territory? Dan couldn't even maximize their own living space. The Amori pressed them back up into the mountain. They did not allow them to descend into the valley. Exactly which mountain and valley this is, we don't know. What we do know is that here already, their living space is being affected. The Amori are pushing them back. And the Amori occupied the areas of Har Cheres, Ayaloin, Shalvim, and the Bnei Dan were already saying, we're already in some trouble. But then Shevet Yosef came and gave Dan a hand. Beis Yosef, the house of Yosef's hand was heavy over them. And they subdued the Amori. And here already you would think, you see the troubles are starting, right? The Amori were actually pressing Dan back. Beis Yosef comes, they help them out, they manage to subdue the Knani, now drive them out. No, they collected a tax. And they set the borders that the Amori border was from Ma'ale HaKrabim and up. And below that was the border, was the air territory of Shevet Dan. So this, the Malbim says, also there's, the Navi is expressing complaints here. What's going on? Right? You see that you had a hard time with them. You see that they were pushing you back. You see that you needed to bring Beis Yosef in to help you out. And now finally you manage to get things under control. You're still not going to do the job. But no, this is the picture of the conquest campaign. Now, we have to go back and look at the Psukim of Yehuda after we saw all this. Right? So what did it say? Wait. Sorry, I'm just going to get the safer. Yeah. So now having seen this, just quickly read through Yehuda again, and now we'll already have a little bit of a different take on it. Won't be as boring as when we read it before. I'm going to skip Sukkim here with the added narrative. But Yehuda ascended, and Hashem gave the Kanani and Perizi into their hands, and they smote them in Bezek to 10,000 men. Yehuda battled against Yerushalayim and captured it. And what did they do after they captured it? Let's note this. We didn't see this in any other Shvatim. They wiped it out by sword and they burnt the city down. Then they descended to fight the Kanani dwelling in the mountain and in the south and on the plains. Then Yehuda went to the Kanani dwelling in Hebron, and then from there to Dvir. Okay. Then we had the little story of Asniel. Then Yehuda went along with Shimon, his brother, right? They had an alliance. And they smote the Kanani living in Tzfat, and they destroyed the area. A completely different picture, right? Now we're seeing it in contrast. Then Yehuda captured Aza and its suburbs, Ashkelon and its suburbs, Ekron and its suburbs, and Hashem was with Yehuda, and they drove out the residents of the mountain. Okay. Kalev drove out of Hebron the three giants. That's Yehuda. Now it's already less boring, I think. Right? Yehuda, and now we go back again. Now we're basically moving backwards. Now we go back all the way to the beginning of Navi, back to the question that was asked of Hashem. Who should be the one to start the campaign? And Hashem answers Yehuda. Now we're seeing at the end how it plays out. Boy, was Yehuda the choice. Right? Look at the difference. So, again, we have to note a couple of things. Here we're seeing Yehuda taking the position of leadership. Yehuda was already destined, this was an attribute of Shevet Yehuda, as a Shevet, which they got from their original father, Yehuda, and was ingrained in them. Yehuda, in general, throughout the periods, the different periods, were the leader tribe. That's why also the Malchus is by Yehuda. And here we're seeing even before the Malchus, this was Yehuda. So now, as we said before, there are two aspects being manifested here by Yehuda's action, as opposed to the other Shvatim and their relative, I keep stressing, relative laxness. First of all, it's again, the energy in fulfilling the word of Hashem. We're seeing here that yes, Yehuda was on a higher spiritual level than the others. They were a greater Shevet. They were more meticulous, more from, if we'll put it that way. Right? They did what they needed to do. But there's the other aspect also, like we stressed before. Part of the question of who should go first was, this initial campaign, which Yehuda ended up carrying out, carries implications for all the rest of Klal Yisrael. The question is, who can be given the responsibility for how the rest of the wars are going to play out for Klal Yisrael? Because as we said, if the first victory was after the death of Yeshua, if that first victory would be decisive, would be strong, it would keep the morale going, it would keep the other nations afraid, they would see that things are not changing after the death of Yeshua. See, Yehuda, in addition to the meticulousness, in addition to the zrizos and the heroes and the Dvar Hashem, they went about it with a sense of national responsibility also. Which is really the reason that Yehuda was Zeicha l'Malchus. This is also a trait that they had from their father. That sense of national responsibility, responsibility for everybody. That's part of what drove them to not stop. They couldn't let up for a minute because all of Klal Yisrael is resting on this. So it was never an issue of, like we saw before, is this land really worth the fight? No. Klal Yisrael is resting on their shoulders, and that drove them and motivated them from one battle to the next. Now, already note another point, that here, right at the beginning of Sefer Shoftim, we already have the answer to a mystery that develops later on in Tanakh. We know that as we go further in Tanakh, the ten Shvatim kind of dissipate, and Shevet Yehuda is left. Shevet Binyamin is kind of annexed to Shevet Yehuda. But Yehuda was left. Everybody else kind of got lost. Why was that? I think it's clear as possible when we're in the context of this talking, we see clearly why it was. We see clearly why it was. Hashem made it very clear since the time of Moshe Rabbeinu that your success depends on getting rid of any Knani influence. Right? The nations that you're coming among, Moshe kept telling them, yelling again and again, the nations that you're coming among, they are the worst of the worst. And they do all kinds of abominations. And you'll learn from them and you're going to marry their children and you're going to follow their ways. Get rid of them. Because if not, you'll end up suffering, you'll end up exiled, you'll end up destroyed, you'll end up... Right? This is what played out. Yehuda completely purged their land. They completely cleansed their land. They created the sterile atmosphere Hashem wanted the Jewish people to live in. The other Shvatim did not. The other Shvatim had a polluted atmosphere. At the end of the day, there was all this nonsense going on around them. Now, in that generation, it was so remote to even consider that an influence. These are the people that come out of the Midbar. These are the people who saw the Yad Hashem, right? Any thought that they would be influenced by them? And in that generation, the bulk of the nation was not. But the question is not how things seem now. The question is, there's 800 years of future history to take into account. And in 800 years of future history, Yehuda was sterile. There was absolutely no foreign influence, while the air in all the rest of the Shvatim was polluted. And therefore, there's no wonder that yes, it was polluted, it was infected. Infection spreads. After a while, what starts as a tiny little infection, unnoticeable, can turn into a terrible ailment that simply kills the person. That's what happens. Now, at the end of the day, we know that Yehuda also ended up getting infected by Avodah Zarah. But there was no comparison. First of all, the Shvatim were contending with Avodah Zarah that was there from the beginning, was always there, was always a presence, and on a large scale, because you had whole communities that stayed functioning. Yehuda wasn't like that. Their area was sterile. A little bit seeped in from the outside. We're going to get to that when we get to the whole story of Shlomo and the daughter of Korah. But Yehuda started their history in Eretz Yisrael in a completely sterile environment. The environment that Hashem envisioned. An environment that's completely clean of any foreign influence, where everybody in the territory of Yehuda is exposed only to Torah standards and ideals. Living on a plane is completely above the rest of the world. The rest of the Shvatim were not. Now, at the end of the day, it was so far from them, it was so remote from them, could they possibly be influenced? And the answer is that yes, you can possibly be influenced. If it's there, it's in the frame of reference. If it's in the frame of reference, it's already an infection. How fast it'll spread, how badly it'll spread, that's a question. But the infection is there. What's that? No, I'm talking outside of Yehuda. Completely sterilized their area. And so here's really already the answer. Right at the beginning, that seed was already planted, that Yehuda was going to remain, and the rest of the Shvatim were not. Now, okay, sorry, I just lost my train of thought. Okay, we'll proceed. The David HaMelech Maisa describes this. You have to understand what this big campaign was. It's just very, very clear. David HaMelech describes this in Tehillim, where he says, "Vayishmidu es ha'amim asher amar Hashem lahem." This is in the middle of a long parak of Tehillim describing all the events, the development of the Jewish people. They did not wipe out the nations that Hashem told them to. Now what was the problem with that? Here's the problem. They mingled with the goyim around them and they learned from their actions. This was what Hashem was trying to avoid. It should be a sterile atmosphere with no influence other than Torah influence. And this resulted in that they served their statues, and they served as a pitfall for them. Bayez Bechoz Bnei Ves Bnei Seh Mashedim. What's that? I forgot, I think it's Kufov. Etc. And yes, Vayichav Hashem Ba'amoy, Vayitoev Esnach Aloso. Hashem grew angry with his nation, and he abominated them. So David, in very, very short terms, is describing a period of a very long time, with a lot of subtleties. But if we want to sum it up in a nutshell, that's what happened. They left the nations there, that caused them to be exposed to them, that caused them to be influenced, even though, as we'll see, a very minute amount of the Jewish people were influenced, and that was what caused all the future problems. Now, after all, this is a very important point to note, because we gained this experience in retrospect. We now know, having learned from the bitter experience, the dangers of exposure to the wrong things. But at that time, you can't blame them for not feeling like it was such an urgent need. I want to use for an example a halacha that Chazal say. We all know what a soita is, right? Soita is a woman committed adultery. Now Chazal say, Lama nismecha parshas nozir leparshas soita. The parsha of soita is immediately followed by the parsha of nozir, a person who abstains from wine, etc. Why does it follow the story of soita? It says that a person shira'a soita b'kilkula yazir atzma minayim. If a person saw a soita in her degenerate state, he should abstain from wine. He has to realize that he better take measures to avoid following in her footsteps. Now let's understand this. What did he see? What did he see? You know what he saw? He saw the woman dragged into the Beis HaMikdash. He saw her utterly disgraced. And then he saw her pop. And he saw her innards fly around the Azara. That's what he saw. And we're saying, ooh, you were exposed to something bad. That's a bad influence. You better start taking measures. What's going on? This is going to be the last person. He knows, by the way, that the same thing happened down in wherever it is where her counterpart was. That's how it worked. As she exploded, the other guy did also. Isn't this going to be the last person to be exposed? Chazal are telling us something. The Torah is telling us something. Hashem knows human nature. And human nature is such that, yes, at the time, it's disgusting. And you go away feeling like, now I see what happens to such a person. But it becomes something that could happen. It's no longer theoretical. It's already in the frame of reference, in a very negative way, but it made it into your frame of reference. Therefore, it's something that could happen. Up till then, you're never exposed to it. It's just something that can't be. The whole parsha of sight is completely theoretical. Once it happened, and you saw the terrible results, it's already something that could happen. And that is already problematic exposure. The Torah is saying, you have dropped. And Yisrael Salanti said, he was with Yisrael Salanti, he said, you take a boiling hot piece of iron, you throw it into cold water, it reacts violently, right? You hear a loud, can't stand it. But then touch the iron afterwards, it's cool. It's not as hot as it was before. Yes, there's a violent negative reaction, but the exposure was there. It's mamash the same thing, it's exactly what happened with Amalek also. He said, what were Amalek coming to show? Kal Yisrael are not invincible. How'd they show that? By getting completely wiped out. What did Amalek do? Because I'll say they cooled off the boiling hot bath. How did they cool it off? The nation saw Amalek be completely wiped out. The answer is, beforehand it was unthinkable. Now it's not unthinkable anymore. This is a very fine point in human nature. But this is what the Torah is worried about. Right? I don't want you among people who at this time, besides the fact that as the years go by, you don't know where the generations will be holding in 200-300 years from now. But the Torah is worried about those elements of human nature, and therefore the Torah is insisting on absolute sterility. Okay. Now, I want to note that this period, according to my cheshbon, how long was this going on? according to my calculation, I'm not sure if I'm right, there's about 14 years. This whole thing that we're describing here. Huh? No, after the Sheva Shekom, Sheva Shekom, Sheva Shekom. Another point, yeah, Sheva Shekom, Sheva Shekom, because they were busy the whole time. But then reached the point where each tribe was expected to clear out their territory. And it was 14 years when we saw everything that we described, saw here described. Now let's go back to Yehuda. We saw Yehuda fight about 10 battles. Right? We don't know how long each of those battles took. It just says, like, very in the Psukim, it's very quick, one after the other. But we're talking about fighting cities, many of which were fortified. Did each battle take weeks, months, a year, more than a year? Assuming there was a variation. But packing 10 battles into 14 years, it was about 10. I don't remember what we read before, right? Everything we just rattled off before. Think about that in practical terms. Packing 10 battles into 14 years. We're talking about a very, very tough effort, right? We know from ourselves, if the Rachmana Litzlan, there's a war in Eretz Yisrael for a couple of weeks, and for a year, we're still under the effect, right? So, what Yehuda did was superhuman. Well, we're not going to say superhuman. It was the border of superhuman. But this is what Hashem expects of the Jewish people. To drive themselves all the way up to exactly the roof of human capability. That's what Hashem wants. Always moving. Hashem is always whipping. Keep moving. We can't really blame these Shvatim. This is the perspective I was talking about before. We can't really blame these Shvatim. Nobody is coming and saying, they didn't wipe this area out, not that area, that not that area. 14 years is not a long time. We can well assume that actually, when it says that the Shvatim didn't wipe out this area, didn't wipe out that area, doesn't necessarily mean that they decided not to do it. It could be, but sure they decided to do it, but a little breathing space in the middle. Right? A little breathing space in the middle. They didn't think they were expected to move that fast. Yehuda got the whole job done in this period. If it takes us 30 years to carry out 10 battles, is that terrible? It's not bad if you think about it in practical terms. So can you blame them for thinking that they had a little more time? It's like we said before, it was one of these types of mitzvahs that is not clear cut. It's like Torah learning, right? It's Torah learning. It's up to each of us to decide whether we are doing enough or we're not doing enough. They're also, of course, Hashem was taking into account that they're going to eat supper at night, that they're going to go to sleep. And of course, after a battle, they might be entitled to a week's break. So the question is, how long of a break are they entitled to? 3 days? A full week? 2 weeks? Yehuda's attitude was, there is no time. I don't know if they gave themselves no time in between. I don't know if they were already starting the next battle while they were finishing the first. The other Shvatim were approaching it a bit more practically. Saying, it's okay if we take a break for a week, for 2 weeks. We could even justify if they took a break for a year after a tough battle. And again, they weren't working. Hashem didn't tell them in the first place, you have this and this amount of time to accomplish what you need to accomplish. So where we stand now, probably, right, from the perspective of these tribes, we're in the middle of the story. It's not that we did it. We haven't yet. Wait, we'll get there. And now we begin Perek Beis. All of a sudden, it's like Hashem comes and says, game over, without warning. And all of a sudden it turns out that they had that window of 14 years, and it's finished. Why weren't they warned? Is it fair? The answer is, he doesn't have to warn them. He expects you to be proceeding at almost superhuman rate. So what happens? Vayal malach Hashem in Gilgal el haboichim. A messenger of Hashem came from Gilgal to a place called Boichim. We're going to see soon why it was called Boichim. Who was this messenger? This was Pinchas, the Navi. Gilgal was the center, that's where the Mishkan was. That was the center of prophecy. He was coming from Gilgal, it meant he was coming with a message from Hashem, and he was coming with a message for the generation. Vayomer. He gathered the people together and he said as follows. A'alezchem Mitzrayim. I have taken you out of Mitzrayim. Va'avieschem el ha'oretz asher nishbati la'avoseichem. I brought you to the land that I swore to your fathers. Va'oymar lo'yofer brisi itchem lo'ilam. And I planned on not nullifying my covenant with you forever. Meaning, the way I had it envisioned was, we're starting something good, we're going to be on a great track forever. But that depends on your performance. Ve'atem lo'itichesu bris liyoshvei ha'aretz hazois. Now, but there is a string attached. You have to hold on to the string. Do not make a covenant with the people of the land. Es mizbechoisen titzoitzun. Smash their altars. V'lo yishmatem b'koili. But you did not listen to what I said. You did not hear, follow my command. Ma zois asisa. What have you done? So here he's coming and leveling the accusation. The next pasuk, he gives the sentence. So let's first analyze what's being stated here. So first of all, again, words of the Navi are not extra, and they're not poetic. Everything has significance. There's a very specific message being conveyed. I took you out of Mitzrayim because that's what I swore to your fathers. I planned on not nullifying my covenant with you, and you make sure to sterilize the area. Right? What he was saying was, a chosh of a point. This is how the Al-Sheikh explains it. He's saying, you feel that you're able to light up. Now, we are comfortably settled in Eretz Canaan. Now we can relax. Now we're already on secure ground. Right? Hashem says, don't kid yourself. You're not on secure ground. Why are you here? You know why you're here? Not because you're necessarily going to be here in another 2 years from now. You're here because I swore. This is the words of the pasuk. I brought you to the land that I swore to your forefathers. I swore to your forefathers that I'd take you out of Mitzrayim and bring you to Eretz Canaan. I did that. And therefore, as far as I'm concerned, my contract is finished. Don't think that you by necessity have to stay in the land now. I paid my debt. Now, you can end up in the Mediterranean next week. That's what he's telling them. So I said, 1 minute, will it continue? Doesn't have to. What did I promise Avram? I'll settle you in the land. You're settled. Finished. Right? I was Yotze. Now, as far as I'm concerned, you can all go jump in the lake. But I figure that it will continue. But if you want it to continue, you have to hold on to my covenant. There's nothing to take for granted here. Don't think that now that you're settled, you're here. You're here for good? No. It depends on your holding on to my covenant. There's no chazaka. And chazaka is, you figure things are status quo. Hashem is saying there's no status quo. You're here today because I promised Avram. I was Yotze, now I can dump you all in the Mediterranean. If you're not going to be careful about keeping up to my standards, there is no guarantee you'll be here next week. So therefore Hashem says, Ma zois asisem. My stipulation was, sterilize the area. I do not want any foreign influence here. What have you done? Hashem doesn't come and say, you have done bad. Hashem comes and says, what have you done? There's an expression of shock, right? It's not just coming and saying, question. Before Hashem, note that also. Hashem is bringing out that there is something just that doesn't add up here. There's something that doesn't add up. Both from the moral perspective and from the logical perspective. After you saw everything I saw fit for you in Mitzrayim, the automatic expectation would be, right? How should the response be? After I tore apart nature for you, I should see you tearing apart your own natures. Like, that would be the expectation. You should be killing yourself head over heels to show your loyalty for me. Right? To keep to my command to the T. Why are you sitting here? The sight is shocking. The sight is incongruous. It just doesn't make sense. And also logically, that's from the moral perspective.
right? Hashem is busy doing all these things for you and you're just sitting? And also from the logical perspective, what are you thinking? You saw everything who Hashem is. You saw what happened in the Mitzrayim. And you have the nerve to just sit by and ignore what he said? After you saw Hashem tear apart Mitzrayim, after you saw the 10 plagues, after you saw Kriyas Yamsu, you have the courage to sit back? Hashem said move and you're sitting in your place? So it's not just you've done bad. It's what's going on here. This just doesn't add up. But there's another implication in the question also, which is really preface to the sentence. The sentencing that Hashem is about to issue. Hashem says, what have you done? I'm asking you a question. Can you tell me what you did? You don't understand what you did. You, by allowing there to remain this foreign influence among you, have actually, like we just said before, you have planted the seed for your exile. You have planted the seed for your ultimate banishment from the land. I'm asking you, what did you do? You might answer, oh, well, we might have gone about it fast enough. No, that's not what you did. You did a lot more than that. You have set the stage for being thrown out. That's what you did. And therefore Hashem continues and says, V'gamamati lo yagaleish yisamit mechem. The game is over. I said, go purge the land, I'll be with you. You took your time doing it, finished. I'm retracting my promise of divine assistance. Not retracting. It ran out. It expired. I didn't tell you that there's an expiry date. You figured you have all the time in the world. It expired. Kamamati lo yagaleish yisamit mechem. No, I'm not going to drive them out before you anymore. That's it, it's not going to work. Those who are still here are going to stay, and now, contend with it. As they say in English, stick it in your pipe and smoke it. V'hayu lachem letzidim. Yes, there will always be thorns in your side from now on. From now, you're going to live in Eretz Yisrael with these people here. You're not going to be relieved of them. They're always going to be poking you in your side. And up till now I was telling you to avoid this. Now I'm telling you that this is the reality. Their gods are going to be a stumbling block for you. This is what's going to be going on now. You're going to be contending the whole time with the threat and the test of Avodah Zarah. It wasn't meant to be that way. You didn't have to be dealing with that threat the whole time. If you would have been very energetic now and you would have gone about your business in the standard that I expected, you wouldn't have had to contend with to compete with Avodah Zarah at all in the centuries you'll be occupying Eretz Yisrael. Now this will be a constant struggle. You had an opportunity and you missed it. Now the Mitzvah adds that the truth is that the two go together. Hashem is kind of saying two things which are almost opposites. They're going to be thorns in your side, meaning they're going to make you problems on the physical level, and their gods are going to be stumbling blocks for you, which means that they're going to be making you problems on the spiritual level. But really it's all one and the same. Since their gods are going to be around, you're going to mess up, you're going to trip up, and therefore, when you trip up, I'm going to allow them to have victories over you. So this is the sentencing. Vayehi kidaber malach Hashem es advarim o'el el kol b'nei Yisrael. And as the messenger of Hashem spoke all these things to the b'nei Yisrael, vayisu ha'om es koilam vayivku. What was the reaction? The entire nation began weeping. Now this is also something to note. Because in later years, a couple of hundred years down the line, a Navi coming with this sort of message did not get this reaction. He got stones, he got resentment. This, they were completely open. We have to note, this is the greatness of that generation. Right? That the whole nation responds not by, what do you want from us? Like we just said before, 10 battles in 14 years. What do you want from us? There was no, what do you want from us? We didn't live up to being told. You should know, you took it a little easy, it was a little too much, you did not live up to Hashem's standards. What's their response? The whole nation is weeping. And it was such a major event that became the place of the name of the place. The place was called Boichim from then on. Boichim means the place of weeping. And they responded by offering many karbanos to Hashem. Okay, we have to elaborate on this blinether a bit more. We'll stop for this week.